Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com debate physics also, but as stated, the debate is a little thin. So, but we'll do what we can with what we have. So, the Ian Gosling person has provided another comment that to me is, you know, kind of revealing that there is something deeply wrong. And it's not, this isn't about having a reasoned argument, and it wasn't 300 years ago, you could argue. And it wasn't in the whole Einstein revolution. There really is something in people that just, they don't want the truth. And that's what it comes down to as I see it. It's, they don't want a truth that is, you know, static and simple and... Yeah, makes life less magical or something. They want something more in reality than reality. There's something like that, some sort of something. I don't get it. Okay, yeah, that's just the frank truth. I don't get it. I never got it. That's why I've always been stuck in some place where I'm an outsider looking in, saying, "What the hell? How do I find anything to connect to in this world? Because everything is covered in this slimy bullshit. The truth isn't appreciated. It isn't revered. It isn't cherished. You know, people don't hug it. It's just not... it's the enemy, in a way. And to me, it's the only peaceful place. It's the only place you can go. It's the only thing you can hold on to, rely on, depend on. That kind of thing. So, you know, as I was looking at the world as a kid, yeah, every time they told me one of these scientific truths, you know, it didn't sound right, didn't make much sense, didn't fit, you know, that first drawing of the photon as this fancy creature, you know, all kinds of weirdness and strangeness and bizarreness, and you're saying, how could something so simple, I mean, it's so simple, it's so elemental, it's so rudimentary to the function, how could it have all of these features and it's not a movie star? You know, it's just a photon. You know, how could it be so intricate, so blah blah blah, all this crap, and it's just a lowly photon? It just didn't make any sense. And none of it has sense, and blah, blah, blah. And it's just, it's deeper than. Okay, I guess that's all I can say. This is more than just an argument between reasoning minds about the evidence and where it points. Because they're so dishonest, all right? Since I started this channel, I've been making the simple point that they should have more evidence before they draw a conclusion, that the evidence is less than it should be for the strength of their conviction. And they won't even admit that. They won't even admit that they wish they had more evidence. They won't even say those words. You know, which, that seems so harmless, and you can't even get them to say that. That, yeah, it would be better if they had more evidence. That would be really cool. They can't even think about the subject because they know how weak the evidence is and how that's an argument for some pause and to say maybe they don't have the right answer, and they just can't go anywhere near that. They can't give anybody a moment to even speculate on the possibility that Jesus didn't even exist. You know, that kind of thing. So anyway, that's what we're up against. It's bigger than I thought it was. I thought this was just about making mistakes. And no, this is about religion again. This is about devotion and faith and want. It's not about, you know, there's not a common desire here. And that's just it's just overtly made evident, okay, by the fact that they are so evasive and so dishonest, frankly. All right, so I'll read this comment. Yes, the half mass cannot move at 60 miles an hour of double, I think that says, or double the velocity. That's correct. I don't think that. So he realistically, he thinks, you know, if I use the same force to throw something, I won't be able to somehow get the momentum into the object. So I can have a certain amount of momentum, you know, a standard amount of force, all right, and I can apply it to two objects. And he's basically saying that momentum won't be conserved. So this is sort of one of the things they like to say. You know, I like that they say it. I like that Professor Lewin says it. You can finagle with kinetic energy, but your nature can't finagle momentum. You know, I like that they make now and then a sort of statement kind of pointing out that energy is a real thing, and you have to account for it. You can't let pennies fly off somewhere and not account for them. So he's basically saying that I can have the same force, okay, applied to two different objects, same momentum, you know, same MV, and that somehow the momentum doesn't get into the objects. That somehow it goes somewhere else and I can't find where it went. All right. And that to me, okay, that's a pretty nonsensical statement. So he's saying if I push these two things, that somehow there's going to be something that's going to go radically wrong in the pushing of this lighter object. So the one object is somehow not going to collect the energy. It's not going to end up with the same MV over here. So it has an MV attacking it, but somehow the MV, all right, and it should be in a different form, right? The MV is in one form here, and it's going to be in, you know, big velocity, smaller m, and this one is going to be the bigger m and the smaller v. So somehow it gets into this object. So we have conservation here. You know, the MV here will end up here, okay? But somehow it doesn't work here. So somehow one of these two objects won't conserve the momentum. But there won't be any evidence of it. There won't be any way to detect where the momentum went. And he thinks that's a viable argument. All right. So the Despar guy has done a couple of videos where, you know, he's using a timing gate, but he's just ruining it all. All right. He's just, because he's lost all credibility. He just throws away his own credibility in doing these experiments because he does them sloppy enough where he gets erratic results, and therefore you can't trust any of them. So he did it with a rubber band. Okay, and he did this very experiment, okay, shoot a one mass and a two mass. And he got exactly what I argue you have to get. This is what you have to get. Okay, you get the same momentum, you just get it in a different ratio. So this would be 5 and 10, and this would be 10, okay, and 5. All right, so it's the 10-ton train and the 5-ton train. Okay, the inverse relationship. And that's what exactly he got out of the timing gate. So he shot them both with the same amount of energy, and the timing gate says, yes, that's what I got. Okay, I have the lighter object, a half mass, is going twice as fast coming out of the gate, okay, than the heavier mass. And what happens? Well, they're flying through the atmosphere in this case, and so I've already pointed out, you know, in videos that there's really no choice. Let me just make sure this is... Oh, yeah, it's not. Yeah. Oh, God, I gotta quit doing that kind of shit. All right, anyway, so now you can see it better. Blah, 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 blah. Not that it matters that much, but it does matter. So I've already pointed out how this part is, this physics is just, you really can't get around it, okay? So, I mean, if you have something with twice the velocity here and half the velocity here, their trajectory is, you know, that's dead hard, you know, established physics, that there's no way the movement down will be at the same rate because of gravity being the same for everything. Everything falls at the same rate, essentially. And their forward velocity isn't being impeded by physical surface friction. And so atmospheric friction is a little rougher on the faster object, but it's so little that it wouldn't make enough of a difference. So, you know, but anyway... So his results were that, yeah, he actually got the right result. So it's a complete confirmation of everything I've been saying. So this went half the distance, okay, and this went the full distance, demonstrating exactly what I would argue would happen. Okay, my physics worked perfectly. So then he does another experiment, and this part came out the same. Okay, he got the twice the velocity again, so again, just more evidence against the argument made by Ian. Okay, so another experiment that says, yeah, no, you're wrong. Okay, there is no inertia problem. It does go twice as fast, the same energy in, same energy out, frankly, same momentum. Can't break the momentum, can't change the momentum, can't destroy the momentum. But then you got this loopy result where this only went 0.4 further. So it didn't go here. It ended up falling here. Okay. Now there's two explanations. Either this one went way too far, or this one went way too short. I would argue that the heavy one probably is the problem, and what happened was, because he used a different thing, so he wasn't using a rubber band, this time he used a little spring device, then he probably lifted the two mass up. So he shot it up into the air, and that's why it went further. So this is deceptive, this should have been here, and then you would have had the right result. But the point is he's doing these experiments, and he's just getting radically different outcomes. And you're just saying, well, is that helping you somehow? I mean, I would like to say, hey, look, he did the experiment. It came out exactly the way I predicted. But there's no point in me saying it, right? Because the next experiment doesn't come out exactly as I predicted. Same experiment, technically, you know, and completely different results. So what good is it? What good is it at you as an experimentalist, all right? So obviously there's a defect in your procedure that allows for this variation. And all those defects aren't going to be detectable because you're not doing the experiment very precisely. I mean, you don't have cameras everywhere and you don't have a lot of precise instruments. So you're just proving that this amateur thing is really dangerous. And as I've pointed out, we all should agree that if we're going to have these experiments done, they need to be done very well. So that would be another argument I'd make to the Ian guy, is that, so could you explain the Mythbusters experiment? Just give me some kind of little, you know, paragraph on the subject. I mean, it conclusively, in my opinion, pretty conclusively demonstrates that you don't get four times the energy. So, you know, for those who don't know, I mean, you're just taking a hammer, basically, and swinging it down and measuring how much compression there is. So you go 1/4 the distance up, and then you go 4 units of distance up, and you're supposed to get twice the impact. Twice the velocity. You will get twice the velocity. That's a given. And with twice the velocity, you compress the clay twice as much. There's no four times, okay? So there's no evidence of the kinetic energy theory being correct in the experiment. And then they actually crash the cars, which is also a piece of evidence, right? I mean, you crash the car at 50 miles an hour, and it crushes this much. And then you crash it at 100 miles an hour, and it crushes that much. And so it kind of tells you also. So why are those experiments invalid? I'm just asking. Now, obviously, measuring G-forces, is, I've already explained how that's pretty much impossible unless you have some way of not allowing the... Say, for example, I could take a perfect surface of a sponge and I could slow something down perfectly slowly. So I could move it at 100 miles an hour and it goes into a giant sponge and slows down really perfectly. It'll only show a G-force of like 0.5, you know, just a tiny G-force, because there's no G-force change. I mean, you're changing it a tiny amount because of the sponge. So you really can't measure G-forces unless you're going from complete motion to complete stop. That's the only way you can, you know, realistically do it. And there's no way to do that on a crushing car because all kinds of pieces of the car are moving at different speeds. There are different kinds of sponges. So no matter what you attach your G-force detector to, you're going to get a different number. You attach it to the back seat, you get one number. You attach it to the dashboard, you get a different number. You attach it to the frame in the back, you get a different number. No matter where you put it, you're going to get a different number. So it's not very useful. These are little evidences of even when professionals who are on TV and get, you know, millions of dollars, they can't even do experiments rationally. Right, they couldn't even figure out that if I smash two things into each other, I have two springs, and I crash them into each other, the springs are going to show a certain compression, and that compression is only going to be half in each one. Half the force will be in each one. If I want to know the total force, I have to actually put the spring here in the middle, one spring, and hit it with the mass and the mass. They can't even figure that out, which is pretty dismal. So, so I'm really up against it, right? Because you got to say that some of these smart people aren't very smart. They have a TV show that takes maybe a week or more to produce. I mean, it might take 3 weeks. Who knows how long they were working producing that TV show? How many people are in on it, producing it? And they couldn't figure that out? Nobody? Not a single consultant or staff person or anybody else could figure out the obvious that, oh no, you have to say, what's the pressure here for somebody right in the middle of the crash? What's it going to feel like to him? Yes, it's going to feel like 100 miles an hour. 50 and 50, it's going to feel like 100 to the guy right in between the two. Duh. Yeah, really, duh. I mean, it's so obvious. No, and this is the state of physics. So what else? Is there anything else to say? I don't know. Like I said, we clearly see that Brozo selects what he puts up, okay? And when he takes things down, he puts things up, and blah, blah, blah. So clearly, I'm arguing his experiments have no credibility because all we're seeing is the outcomes that came out the way he wanted. Now, at least this bar is showing us, hey, look, I can make it come out any way you want it. So he's showing us that, yes, doing experiments badly means you can make the results look like anything. Okay, you want 1.4? I'll give you 1.4. You want 2.0? I'll give you 2.0. Just ask me what you want, and I'll make it look that way. So that's dismal. Okay. But that's the truth. And that's why, from the very beginning, I've said, I shouldn't be doing these experiments, and Brozo shouldn't be doing sloppy. This is physics. I mean, physics deserves a little better than this. And the fact that in 350 years, okay, physics hasn't done any of these basic experiments, these basic lever, blah, 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 all these collision, they haven't done any of them. They don't exist. And the only ones that exist are little air, some of the air track ones, right? And they all have, like Professor Lewin's, they got little, there's a blob of clay on that little sled over there. There's little chicaneries. Because they're really trying to just prove the textbook. They're not really, they're trying to show you what the textbook says. They're not doing an investigative experiment. And that's dangerous too. So this atmosphere is terrible. This is a terrible evidence pool to be drawing conclusions in, right? The evidence sucks. And the fact that none of these people will admit this evidence sucks. I mean, it's terrible that we should have hard evidence of momentum being conserved. Now, I think we do have that, frankly. I think NASA knows all of this. So I think NASA will tell you, yes, we know we have videotape. We have to, make our little space stations hit into each other and merge and do all this stuff and dock. And, we know the truth. And they should just videotape it and show us all the goddamn truth. Because they got the perfect environment to do all these experiments in, the space shuttle and the space station. I mean, perfect. Rubber band, shoot something, no atmosphere to worry about, blah, blah, blah. Nothing's going to do anything silly. And they don't do them. They don't show us. Okay. They only show us that, if it's a, they only show us some experiment that's out of the textbook. But anything that's not in the textbook, they don't want to, you're not going to see it. All right, so I'll talk a little bit about relativity because I've just been, I've been reading. Unfortunately, the book I'm reading is now, it's sort of past the stage where Einstein introduced his new physics, and it's now just stuck in the politics of World War I and World War II, and, so it's all politics, and there's not much physics, which is kind of depressing. But anyway, it's part of the life of Einstein, but frankly, it's not the part that I don't think there's much to say, right? I mean, a German Jew in World War II, yeah, that's going to be a problem. But anyway, I shall pause and we will move on. So, Ian Gosling, what was wrong with the MythBuster experiment? I mean, why is that clay experiment inferior to Brozo's? Do you really think momentum isn't conserved? Even though all the physicists say so, you don't think it has to be. Or you don't think you have to account for where the energy went. Okay, so I'm just saying, if you're saying the rubber band can't make things go twice as fast, or the spring can't make them go twice as fast, or the lever can't make it go twice as fast, where does the energy go? Where does 0.6 of the energy go? Well, 0.1, right, of the total energy go. All right, so till the next time. We'll be back in a minute. I just have to erase. All right, I'm back. It's always hard to go through all this relativity stuff and why it doesn't make any sense, the whole idea that simultaneous events could happen in the universe, and because you're sitting here, somehow you can't figure out that because you're closer, you get the message sooner from one than the other, and that you can't figure out that, like, say, if they were making, stuff was flying off of them at a rate, that they would also be, hey, look, that's, from my perspective, that isn't halfway between the two objects. You know, the halfway point won't look like the halfway point or whatever. That we can't figure all this stuff out. No, yeah, okay, this happened at the same time this did, and I could figure it out by different things that are left over from the event. And you could say, well, if this frequency was a certain frequency that this was happening, and this one was a different frequency, that this frequency would match this frequency eventually after a certain amount of time, and they'll be in phase or out of phase. And so there's lots of ways to figure it out, but, you know, you can't change when stuff happens in the universe because you talk about your perspective being, you know, dependent on photons traveling the speed of light. Well, so what? So that doesn't make any sense at all to me. And then this equivalency principle is all based on the fact that, you know, gravity, okay, whether you gain a velocity from gravity and then gravity stops somehow, you have a velocity, or whether you're being accelerated, okay, in gravity, it's not going to make any difference to you. You're not going to feel it ever, okay? You're never going to feel gravity pushing you because gravity, as I pointed out, pushes all of you at the same time. It doesn't leave any of your nerve endings behind. It doesn't leave some piece behind so you can feel the difference. So when gravity moves you, your stomach and everything moves at the same rate. And so you don't feel any difference. Now, you feel the difference because you're used to things moving at a different rate. You're used to your skeleton moving first and all of that stuff. So it feels different to you. But the difference is because now you're in a different state. You're not on Earth, and the Earth isn't pushing you back. The whole time you're sitting on Earth, it's pushing you back. And it's moving pieces of you faster than it's moving other pieces of you. So that's what you're used to feeling. That's easy to understand. That, you know, yes, of course, gravity, it doesn't matter whether you're accelerating gravity or you have a velocity. It doesn't matter. But you're never going to feel gravity. You can only feel the force fighting back. The force that hits you unevenly, that hits your feet or your ass or some other part of your body first. You can only feel forces that have to go through your matter a piece at a time. You can't feel a force that's moving all of it at the same time. So that's sort of a duh. And the other one is, you know, the equivalency principle, which, you know, is basically trying to say that, you know, all motion is equivalent, and it really isn't. And that, you know, we're going to play some game where, again, the light clock, so I have the spaceship, you know, and I'm bouncing a photon back and forth. And the idea is that I could tell my speed, because as the rocket ship goes faster, this line is going to bend, okay, even though the photons are going dead straight. And they're going to hit this side at exactly the same time. The time they hit isn't going to change. Okay, it's just the location they're going to hit is going to change. And that would be a speedometer, and it would tell you exactly how fast you're going, and so it wouldn't be relative motion anymore. You'd know exactly who's moving, because they have a speedometer right there in their rocket ship. And the other argument is that the simple kind of argument that if I bang a small thing into a big thing, so the small thing has the energy. Well, what happens is the small thing hits and bounces. Okay, because it can't put all its energy into the big thing. So it gets a rebound. So the small thing ends up going this way, and the big thing ends up going that way. Now, if I hit a big thing into a small thing, that doesn't happen. The small thing doesn't get all the energy again. It just gets an equal amount. And the big thing keeps going this way. So obviously, who has the energy matters. It's not equivalent. This experiment doesn't come out the same as this experiment. You can't reverse them, so to speak. So again, it's another reason, that relativity stuff ain't going to work. You can't pretend nothing has the energy. Something has the energy in every experiment. Every experiment has, when you're banging things into each other, one of them has the energy and one of them doesn't, or they both have energy. But there's no such thing as not being able to tell, I guess is the argument. You can tell. Because certain things happen when you do it one way, and they happen a different way when you do it the opposite way. And even those experiments haven't been highlighted or done, and, you know, these are tests. This is like the Eddington experiment. It's like the Michelson-Morley. It's a way of testing, and they don't even try to test because they want the conclusion. They don't want the truth. They just want the conclusion. You know, they want their truth, the truth that they've all agreed is the truth they like better, I guess. It comes down to that. And you can, like I said, you can sort of see it in the whole mass hysteric popularity of Einstein. People didn't even understand the theory. And they just are already bowing to it. And it's just like, what sense does this make? And so few voices. And all the voices against were, you know, largely, too, tainted by this whole, the politics. People were just saying he's a Jew, so can't trust the Jews. That was why they were disagreeing. I mean, just idiotic bullshit. And the whole thing is just so messy. So anyway, nothing to say. It's just I didn't think that's the game I was in, okay, when I started this. I just thought all I had to do was put together some reasoning, some logic, and some evidence, and that was all that would be required. But apparently, it's not. And that sucks. Is the bar is already pretty high, okay? You know, you're against a whole bunch of really smart people, okay? They've had hundreds of years to cobble their monster together. And I've got to build my little Davy monster, you know, out of almost nothing. So it is it's a bad enough task, even if it were an honorable fight. And the fact that they're kind of cheating, and cheating kind of aggressively, like they won't even admit, oh yeah, we should have better evidence than this, a lot better evidence. Well, anyway, so that's the state of things, blah blah blah, lament, and I will just attempt to continue to endeavor to persevere in my struggle to defend the truth against all the truth haters. Yuck. Just didn't think there were so many of them. I just thought people were better motivated. I thought especially the science types were better motivated. That they could be persuaded by evidence. Again, the Mythbuster video should have just... Whoa, we gotta slow down. I mean, we say kinetic energy exists, you do a perfect experiment to illustrate it exists, it doesn't show up, and you just crush a tin can and pretend, well, it just didn't happen in this experiment, but I'm sure it's there. Kind of bullshit. I mean, come on. Too pathetic. All right. So, until the next time and such, this has been a draftphysics.com video presentation. Debate physics also, but yeah, like I said, they won't even allow me to structure a debate because they won't provide any counter arguments. So again, I haven't heard anything. So what was wrong with the Mythbuster Clay experiment? Why was it deceptive? Explain, please.